Hey, this birth been a long time coming, y'all.
Coming since 1983, when I was brought into this world as a beautiful kid. I couldn't see it then, but I see it now. My vision is clear, and everything I wanted simply appeared. It's right here. Gotta grip it and grab it and seize the moment. My time is now. My flow was golden. My name was chosen by a couple that's in love to this day. They taught me everything I know. That's why I'm built this way. To put my faith in a position, take flight with grace. I learned from living and making mistakes, forsaking my place. Press masonry late, whatever the stakes. It's how I'm at your top for 10 bucks. It's more than a case, it's more than a taste of my soul and of my life and of my past. Focus on the future to make time last, to make you all want it and make the world want it. It's like crack, cause you can't sleep on it.
This birth,
come on, y'all. It's here, y'all. All area crews, y'all know it's good. Las Vegas,
this birth, ayy.
Las Vegas, come on, y'all. Campfire music, y'all. Cynical. I see you, boy. Y'all know what it is.
Sis birth,
here, y'all. Ha. You know what it is. Come on, get ready. Hey,
birth.
Come on.
Sis birth.
I feel good, y'all. It's been a long time coming. But I'm here.
You never thought that hip-hop would take it this far. Now I'm in the limelight cause I rhyme tight. Time to get paid, blow up like the World Trade.
Since birth, just been born. And that's my good friend, Samson, who is a local hip-hop artist out here in Las Vegas, coming to you from live from Las Vegas. And, of course, this is Andrew Fetter. Well, of course, the last time I looked, I'm Andrew Fetter. And welcome to When Pigs Fly. I hope everybody enjoyed my show 2 weeks ago with Tommy and Davy Jones. That was a fascinating show with the ghosts, and I see dead people, and, of course, having aired a interaction of a live ghost. That was pretty fast, caught me off guard, pretty fascinating. Please do check that out. That was it was great. Anyway, I do want to tell you about a couple quick announcements before I have my special guest who is patiently waiting. He was supposed to come on shortly when I was hospitalized, unfortunately, Zany. But I do have a couple of announcements just to talk about. In 2 weeks from today, the 29th, I do have a very, very special show that I'm going to do. Usually I come up with shows when it relates to situations that I hear from people around me and actually from your emails or from messages through MySpace, too. And I was just wondering, you know, a lot of people feeling down, life seems like a total drag. Well, you've been feeling depressed, manic depressant, bipolar. Life is like seems like a damn merry-go-round. You seem like you go from one relation to another, and you seem like you're with the same damn partner. Well, just imagine, and you have to hear my show then on the 29th, and you'll find out why. So put that on your calendar, and you don't want to miss it. Now, another thing is I want to thank, on another pretext, I had a great signing event here in Las Vegas, and I was very thankful for all the people who had come in the past, and I look forward to all future people who would love to see you out. Just chat, whatever, for my newly released book, The Heretic. Now, also, I'd love to, if any of you have questions, and feel free to check out through the archives, in the past shows, even regarding free energy, about politics of today, or about spiritual items like out-of-body experiences, regressions, lots of things, or Kabbalah. Please do contact me. I'm open. Say what you wish, comments, questions, suggestions, whatever. And contact me at flyingpigs@artlover.com. That's my email address, of course. Or if you have a MySpace account, MySpace/Andrew Fetter. Now, I have a very special guest. I was on his show, actually twice. He goes by Zany Mystic, and he's definitely a mystic. He's also also known as Lance White. And he has shortly just written a book called The Tales of Zany Mystic. Now, he has a show, like I said, I was on a show on BBS Radio, and you should always check it out. It's called Fireside Chat. It's on Saturday. Check out on schedule. I forget exactly time. I think it's around 7 o'clock Pacific. And he is a fascinating individual. He has gone through leaps and bounds through his life. And if you check out his book, surely you'll find out, it is like to the extreme of Philip Roth Portnoy's complaint. And if he is still on the line, Zany, welcome to When Pigs Fly. How you doing?
Oh, good, Andy. Thank you. I hope I can call you Andy by now.
Yeah, that's fine. People call me Andy, Andrew. My dad used to get, when he got pissed off at me, when he'd call me Andrew, then I knew he was pissed. And I did something bad, so that
yeah.
was... Like when I hear Andrew, like first thing I did, but everybody made that more formal, and that's fine. I gotta ask you. I mean, we get into politics and stuff like that, and 2012 and issues like that. But it was pretty interesting when I was reading your book. It seemed like almost like a diary in a sense. It was like almost you felt like you went back in time, and you regressed yourself to the experiences and start jotting down almost like a diary. And it seemed like, holy hell, man. I mean, if people knew, people talk about dysfunctional families. I mean, you had a bipolar family. I mean, your parents play off like they're a new age or hip or way ahead of the scene, but they're so narcissistic and so selfish.
Yeah.
And they were, which created your own situation, and they were just, into their own, little world, getting, the pleasure thing of getting high or doing whatever.
Yeah.
And sexually gratifying themselves. And then on the other side, you're hanging with your grandparents who were, more like your parents, normal parents.
Yeah.
So that was it was pretty strange. You lived in a two different worlds, basically. It seemed like how you grew up.
Well, it really was like that. My parents, it's almost as if they, well, for one thing, they were alcoholics, okay? And I think that, let me preface anything I say by mentioning that I think that we choose our experiences before we come here, so we kind of have a map. We have them kind of mapped out, not in total detail, but the broad strokes, like the tree branches and stuff. And it's up to us to fill in the leaves and the rest of it. But my grandparents were pioneers. They came out here from Kansas, and they were just wonderful people. And they had a ranch in Goleta, and my parents lived in Santa Barbara, so there was about 10 miles difference between them, but there was light years in difference in lifestyles. My parents...
That was like old Santa Barbara.
Yeah, exactly.
When it was a really, I mean, people, if they visit Santa Barbara now, look as a big college town or a big, more like artsy type of town.
Yeah.
But then it was like a teeny little...
Oh, yeah, it was nothing. I mean, it was all orchards and... old families owned pretty much most of it, whatever, was not just, free land there. But it was a very small community, and it had the founding fathers had built a, what do you call those things there? It has a lot of historic Hispanic value. They built a mission there, a mission. Yeah, and so it was a beautiful town. It was so wonderful to be on the beaches. It was 70 degrees most of the time, and it was totally different than the town that you see today. And then, of course, my grandparents had a really nice ranch, and then my parents were in the city, and they were pretty much self-absorbed with, you know, just trying to live and survive, and they had crazy friends up from Hollywood where they had met and to fallen in love.
So they got caught up in that whole system, and it's almost like, God, I'm trying to remember her name, it was a singer and her kid, their kid of the singer, and how they she was talking, how she grew up. I think it was one of the mama and papa's kids, and she talked about how she grew up in sort of the same situation. Their parents are out running around getting loaded and stuff, and so then she starts screwing around and getting high herself with some of the musicians, and it was just very chaotic situation. But you know, I agree with you. You know, I totally agree with you. I tend on the premise when you talk about choosing your path and stuff, because I mean, I look at it as like when we come into this lifetime, we actually always tell my kids when they get mad, I said, "Hey, man, you chose me. I didn't choose you." You know, because we technically, when we come back into our embodiment, even as the feet into the fetus area, we choose our we've chosen our life path, and almost like what you're talking about, I always call it like filling a color painting chart.
Mm.
Like it's all black with numbers and stuff like that, and it's already predestined in a sense.
Mm.
And when you reach to that challenge or obstacle, or even what you might call positive or whether negative, and you know way you would look at it, it's your reaction to it.
Yeah.
How you fill it in the color, and that takes you to the next one and the next one. And it's the way you your choices, which people tend to forget. You're always constantly making choices to on your path. In fact, you've chosen that layout. You've chosen your reaction, and you make those. Your reactions are your karmic patterns that are set up. And then, it tends to seem like people who go through certain challenges are for certain reasons, either to things that in the past or past lives haven't overcome, or they new challenges to they make them, you know, build their own personal character or halo or
all of the above.
Or all of the above. Or, you know, it's very grayish, you know, what, you know, it can be many different aspects. But
well, it is. It feels almost like that with boot camp, you know, because and boot camp for living a multidimensional existence as a child, you know, so and with my parents, I had to be a certain way, and they were, you know, very sophisticated, and they talked about UFOs and politics and the things of the day. They were talking about the Bilderbergs back then, which was over 30, 40 years ago, and today, you know, you see Bilderbergs popping up everywhere. Alex Jones talking about them, and my dad used to talk about them, and, you know, he'd say, "Oh, the Bilderbergs own the world." Well, you know, I was a kid, I kind of soaked it all in.
Right.
But,
That's interesting, because like on my family, I just basically grew up, it was pretty much like Wonder World. I mean, it was very suburban, you know, and when my dad worked 7 days a week, we hardly see him till he came back at night. But then I had my thing. It was definitely, there was a lot of very dysfunctional aspects in my family growing up. But it wasn't too extreme what you had. I mean, you know,
I don't know, though. I think everybody has dysfunctional childhood. Not everybody, but most.
But everybody has different elements of it, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You know, that's what I'm saying. It's different.
Yeah,
some, like, very. I've seen people grow up in very harsh realities, and, you know, of parents who should have never been parents.
Oh, absolutely.
So
and
it's. Yeah, it's all
and you
depends.
Either transcend that as you get older and you move out of being a victim, or you continue to blame and, you know, live out your life as if
you are
a victim of your circumstances. And I think one of the purposes of choosing difficulties is to transcend them so that, you know, you become a master of your own life and you realize that, yes, these things happened, but they happened. If they hadn't happened that way, I wouldn't be who I am today.
Right.
And you know, we don't want to take responsibility for our lives and you know, start living as, you know, being responsible, coming from more from a mastery position as opposed to, you know, well, this happened to me and that's why I'm the way I am, and so, you know, just that's my excuse.
Yeah, it's sense of the easy way out.
Yeah.
They want to regress onto somebody else as an excuse. And I think a lot of it has to do with our own societal, too, is very much pushed to that. We tend to blame certain things. It's like the woman who goes, pulls up to McDonald's, buys a hot thing of coffee, puts it on her lap, and then spills it, and then wants to sue McDonald's millions of dollars for spilling her own coffee on her lap. I mean, that's sort of the same. And we have that to some extent in our society. We tend to blame things instead of taking responsibility. It's like, for example, you know, even politically, I'm not going to, we can digress in, but it's like having Bush as a president.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the American people voted or allowed, I don't even know if they voted, allowed him to be in power, didn't really stand up, and allowed things not be investigated. Now it's almost the end of his term, and they go, oh, gee, he actually lied to us. Come on, hello. I mean, it's been going on since the Downing Street memos came out. You know, people retarded or something? And
yeah, I think.
And they've chosen that. You know.
I think as a collective, we chose that experience so that we could teach ourselves a lesson. It's kind of like when we, on an individual basis, we choose experiences that will help us to move beyond or teach us something. And I think that happens as a society and as a collective too, that we choose those experiences and those people who are going to, you know, basically throw it in our face. And we're now starting to wake up, and I think that's the whole point of it, that, you know, we've been asleep, and that the majority of people still are asleep and don't realize what's going on. But enough people are waking up, like yourself and the people who listen to this radio show, are seeing through the matrix or the facade or the illusion, and it isn't matching up to what's going on. It's like
right.
It's a horrible dysfunction in society, and it's supposed to be that way.
Because the first step to healing is first to be aware of the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're not aware that what's really going on, like it's like a lot of people talk of. You know, I don't like to get into politics, but politics, again, it's like when you talk about Bilderbergs and that stuff. And I'm pretty much still into I'm very much into politics and stuff like that.
Yeah, me too.
And but I know about, you know, the Bilderbergs and Trilateral Commission and et cetera. Council of Foreign Affairs. And
Bloodlines and goes on and on.
Well, yeah, all that stuff. And then there's the situation, if people knew about Tesla and J.P. Morgan, and go on to that, which I've elaborated on past shows.
Yeah.
And then there's, you can go, but if somebody asked me, so what do you, can things change? Even let's say, for example, people have choices and in certain situations, dynamics can change. And I say everyone has those opportunities. Even if they're in those situations that they are in power, even if it's like, let's say Obama does become president, and he is, having Zev Brzezinski step in his back behind him back in October and out of nowhere suddenly he has finances for his campaign. Who, if people know Zev Brzezinski, he's head of the Trilateral Commission and part of the Bilderbergs. And it was Carter, by the way, people think Carter, you know, was the same thing as part of Bush. They're all a bunch of, they're on the same club.
Yeah,
I was listening
in.
But I personally think it's almost like people have choices of control, and control can become an illusion. Almost like Kurt Vonnegut's book in Sirens of Titan, people think they're controlling, and there's more people there out there controlling, and the more you think you're controlling, you're not in control.
Yeah, exactly.
But I think that there, even as individuals or on the political frame, that people can change and change and things in the universe can change. Like, I personally think that as much as certain people are coming into power in the Bilderbergs might be in shock and all of a sudden, so we really aren't. And that, I personally think that's going to be a thing that's going to be pulled out from underneath a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a matter of choice of individuality of, you know, it's like, you know, people have choice. You chose your life. Like, you went into your life and you had those many challenges through your experiences with your parents and your grandparents. And then there's the Paris Hiltons who are born in life of luxury and nothing to worry about. And, you know, I'm sure she's had her things, but here she's handed, like, an opportunity and is going, and she's chosen her life, but then is she utilizing it as a narcissistical way, or is she using it to help better herself along with humanity? And that would be the choice of her opportunity. And if she goes one way, the color is maybe the negative side of going out there and partying, getting drugs and, you know, and whatever, and making herself look very, you know, all she cares about her little world.
Yeah.
Or going out to the other way and utilizing what was given to her and utilizing it in a positive way. And that's another choice. So, you know,
I think you have to go through all that to get to the point where you can move beyond it. In other words, I did all the partying and the drugs, and you know, I was a teenager in the 60s. I think you were probably, you know, somewhere around there too. But I missed the San Francisco part of it. I was in Los Angeles. But I think that's something that you have to sometimes go through and experience so that you can move through it.
Yeah.
And not everybody needs to go through that, but some people, some souls need to have that experience so that they can transcend it or go beyond it. And, you know, because at a certain point, it no longer satisfies you. You can have everything in the world, and, you know, like the Peggy Lee song, you end up singing, well, is that all there is? You know, and it's like that with everything. And eventually you reach a point where you realize that the material world is not where it's at, and there's just no denying it anymore, and you have to find something greater or deeper within yourself. And it's just, everything you see and you've tried no longer satisfies you. And you have to turn inside yourself or turn within and look for solutions and answers that are of a higher nature, whatever that may be.
But I definitely agree with you. And you have to, and more so even to the extent that you have to get into, you know, like you're talking, what you took, because I went through, I mean, I was into the hallucinogenic type thing, smoking pot and doing all that stuff.
Oh yeah.
But
and
that
it
was during
open
the
doors, doesn't it?
Well, that was during the 70s and 80s. But see, I wasn't really into so much of the spirituality side.
Yeah.
Of those thing, it was more of the hippie thing. You know, I was tended to push down a lot of my spirituality, because even though it was consistently pushed in front of me. When I got married, and I was only 20 years old, and I was married to my ex-wife, and she was Israeli. We married in Israel. I went to see a famous Kabbalist and a holy person in Jerusalem, and he turned to my brother-in-law, who was a Hasid rabbi, and told him that I should be studying Kabbalah, and they're all in shock, because in order to study Kabbalah in a religious framework, you have to be at least 45, and he says, no, he should be starting that now. And I was consistently being pushed toward that thing. And then, lo and behold, talk a full circle, couple years later, that was 1980, I come back, live in Israel, and then 1982, I was introduced to, introduced to another holy person called the Moa, who was quite famous in Israel, living near Caesarea, and all of a sudden I got back into studying. All of a sudden, got into studying Kabbalism, and a hero was pushed back. And so, no matter how I wanted to run away from it, that was still meant to be my path. I was forced to go through that thing, and then I became ultra-ly religious at one point. And I then left it, didn't want to get involved with it again because I felt it was making me religious. And then coming back another circle, still the universe is pushing me on that path.
Yeah.
Then I met in 1988, Janae St. Clair, who became my spiritual guide along with her husband, Elliot Atlas. And they were working with a Kabbalism type framework. And I all of a sudden got back into the mode of it, but learned I didn't have to get ultra-religious in order to do it. And then, you know, here it is full circle, three times, pushing me on that. So sometimes the universe put you back on course where you're supposed to be, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, yeah.
And then keeps you going on a certain direction. And then you go through certain situations that may have nothing to do with you without over... I'll give you an example. I came to Vegas not out of... it was almost like my Australia, out of illegal consequences. And lo and behold, I'm planning to return back to Los Angeles, hopefully within the next year or so. But 11 years ago, who would have thought? I mean, I was coming out here trying to, I was not in a good circumstance.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yet, after coming here with my daughter, who I raised myself after our split up with my ex-wife.
Uh-huh.
And lo and behold, she meets her husband now today. They've been married for a couple of years and have a grandchild. So it's meant for them to have met. And if I've never came to Vegas, they would have never met.
Yeah.
And then had my granddaughter. So there's a lot of our own connections has sometimes connections for other people. Like I've met people who, you know, I meet somebody and then we meet and then they can, you know, bridge two people. And so sometimes it has nothing even to do with your own choices, but you're meant to go into a situation to create another situation.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you think about it, it's almost like a grand chess game, and everybody's positioned in the perfect place, even if it doesn't seem like that at the moment.
Yeah.
And we're always in the right place at the right time. It just isn't, sometimes we don't see it or we don't agree with it because we're not fully awake to, you know, what's going on around us. But when you look in retrospect, like from this point back, you can see how every little choice and decision took you to a certain place that was beneficial either for yourself or for other people. And if you imagine the whole tapestry of life being managed and orchestrated from outside of itself, it's pretty awesome to... I can't even imagine how that works.
Yeah, it's just amazing because, I mean, I look at circumstances. I never... But then, you know, some things are... I don't know how some of it, like, not just you... You come in a circumstance, and then you, like, and this is where it gets thoughts or things. And by the way, your thoughts are choices, too. If you're thinking your choices, you're creating constantly of what you want to do, not just by your physical actions, but also by your thoughts.
Mm.
So sometimes you put things in motion just by your own thoughts. Like,
absolutely.
So many thinking very negatively, and all of a sudden they have negative circumstances around them. They've actually created their own situation, immediate force. And created a situation that is, you know, possibly, probably negative. But in the same circumstance, like if you said, hey, you know, I've always, in the back of your mind, you kept on putting out, oh, I want to be on a radio show. I was thinking about doing a radio show. And lo and behold, a couple years later, all of a sudden you find yourself doing a radio show.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I think that your choices and circumstances also lead into what your own thoughts are at the time, too, consistently. And it may not manifest at that moment, but it'll manifest somewhere down the line. And I think that has a lot to do with our choices and circumstances. So if you go into a situation that, like what you were talking about, that we're going to color it and our reaction to it, you may not see the reaction of it that second. It may happen years down the line that you reach that karmic manifestation that you just created. You don't know if
you
get what I'm saying.
You mentioned the radio show, and for me, it just kind of appeared out of the blue 3 years ago. Don, the owner of the station, just sent me an email and asked me if I'd like to have my own radio show. And, you know, it was in that moment that I could see I had a choice. I could play small and say, oh, I could never do that, or I could try it and see what happens. And out of making the choice to just take a chance and see what might come up out of it, what might show up, it's been an amazing experience and a journey and growth. The growth that I've had from doing my own radio show has been absolutely exponential. You know, just being able to talk to really interesting people, you know, and ask them questions about various things, spirituality, UFOs, near-death experiences, psychic stuff. It's been a wonderful education for me, and I just know that it's that way for the listeners as well. You know, when they tune into these radio shows, you know, you hear something And it's almost like, gee, I really either needed to hear that or that's really interesting, and it opens doors for you.
And you constantly, yeah, that's, and it's a situation, that's sort of similar, in my circumstance, it was pretty strange. It was like an old girlfriend of mine kept on telling me, man, you should have your own radio show. You should have your own radio show. You're so, you know, you come out with your opinions and da-da-da. And I kept on going, nah, me, I, you know, getting out there and talking and, you know, and I worked in the movie industry as an AD, and, you know, it's one thing saying, hey, call on the set, let's, you know, mark your set and, you know, yell out the crews and stuff. But when the camera, you're in front of the camera, you're like, huh, like a, you know, a deer, feeling like a deer in front of headlights.
Yeah.
There. And then, and it's sort of funny because when I did, well, my first book, When the Angels Are Visiting, I started doing my, you know, being interviewed. And my first show, actually, I was interviewed by, I don't know if you know, Jerry Pippin. And he does, because my book was about, you know, the UFOs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So he got wind of me from a guy named, you know, I don't know if you know, George Knapp.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then contacted me, and then I went on his show. And it was, good thing it was taped, because I was more relaxed, you know.
Yeah.
But when the first time I did a live show, I was like, and it was a guy named Doug Basham, it caught me off guard, and I was sort of nervous. And all my friends were, like, laughing, because I was like,
Yeah.
And I think it was like I realized back then when I did that, it was breaking me in, preparing me so I could do eventually my own show.
Yeah, yeah.
And then lo and behold, I started doing shows after shows, and I got used to it more and more and more. And then when I did, I think I actually did your show, a couple other people on BBS Radio, and then Don, our lovely producer, goes, why don't you do your own show? And I go, just like a bell lit up. And he says, that's what I'm supposed to do. Everybody says I should be doing my own show.
Yeah, yeah.
And get on my own little pillbox, cause, and tell how it is, you know, like, hey, this is it, and take your chance. And then,
yeah,
and it
yeah.
actually made sense what I'm supposed to be doing was to, you know, create bridges and open lines. I try to do is give information and let people, you know, I'm not saying, hey, this is the way it is, and this is the truth. And
right, right.
I go, this is how I view it, and here's how I present it. And I want everybody to look at it, but then choose on your own and do take what you want. And whether I have guests on or I'm just telling what I spill out, what I think, or I want people to just to take that information and utilize it best as possible. And then I felt that's what, you know, that was one of my avenues.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize when I wrote my book that was what opening up a door for that, and which opened another door for other circumstances. So
yeah.
It's like a...
And we never know until we open that door and just take a chance in life.
Yeah.
You've probably heard this a lot from people. They say, gee, I wish I knew what I was supposed to do, or I really want to do this, or I really want to do that. And the really wanna's don't get anywhere because they never step off the edge and just do it, you know.
That's all there is
to it. You just take a chance in life. Take it while you're young, you know, because life is fired at us point blank. This isn't a dress rehearsal. You know, this is the real thing, people, you know, and if you put off your dreams and you wait and wait, what's going to happen is you're never going to have that experience of finding out who you are and how exciting it is to just move into that creative process and just let yourself go. Don't worry about the money.
Yeah, you know what? I'll tell you, talk about leaving situations and taking a chance and doing what you enjoyed.
Mm.
I was making... like I was making good six figures working in doing construction, and I did reconstruction for years.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't really enjoy it. I just hated it, but I was making good money. And then old girlfriend kept on pushing me and saying, you should be in the movie industry, you should work in the video, you'd be perfect in it, you know, and da da da. I love movies, and you know, I was always fascinated. And lo and behold, I go, okay, and then one friend of mine says, hey, why don't you go to, take a year's class, go to, the film school at the AFI film school. They're down a year program. You can learn producing real quick and da-da-da. So I took that and then went to HFI for another 6 months, got more intense for independent. And then it fascinated me so much that the next thing, a door opened up. Where I had to choose just to walk away from construction and try to even be an a PA, which is a production assistant, intern, no money, on a set, and not get paid and eat dire straits and go for it, and then you end up doing that. I walked away, completely walked away. I was not making any money. I also had other things hitting me. And when I started on the set, and I went from in that one movie I worked on it was about a story about urban stuff. It was a famous movie that came out. They shot in L.A. and also in Canada, and I shot in the one. But I moved up quickly from being a PA to second AD to first assistant director within the movie, and I became moving up one direction or another. And when I worked on sets, it was amazing because when you work in a movie, people don't realize you work easily minimum 10 hours, sometimes 11, 12 hours shoot. And I never was tired. In fact, I enjoyed it so much. I didn't even realize it wouldn't by so fast. I was having so much fun.
Oh, yeah.
And I felt like it was duck in water. And then I realized that was why. But, you know, then things happen. Things get pulled from your feet, and you find yourself. And even though that was, like, my dream, I did actually enjoy doing that. Certain things happen, move them forward, that pushed me to where I was really supposed to do, which I also don't mind doing. I also have no problem doing, but I guess I feel like that was meant to be because of that situation. But now I've moved in a direction where, like, you know, whether it's radio shows, writing, which I enjoy doing, maybe down the line I'll have another opportunity doing that, and you take it for what it is, but you go and move forward from the things that you want to try to do, you're saying, and take the chance. And people really do need it, because, you know, life, I had a life-death experience again, almost. I've had multiple times where I was in, overseas, and whether I worked in the army or wars or other circumstances. I think should have been dead 4 or 5 times over, okay?
Me too.
Even as a kid, I drank a whole can of Drano when I was, like, 2 years old. Normally, people would burn out their esophagus, and nothing happened to me. They couldn't figure out what happened, how I was able to. They pumped out my stomach. I got ran over by my own car, pushed through a wall, didn't break a bone, and it looked like a cartoon character. Nothing happened to me.
Yeah.
So I've had I can go on and on.
I've been in a couple of I've totaled several cars drunk. I mean, literally, I passed out at the wheel once. In St. Louis, and completely totaled my car and hit somebody at the side of the road. And all I remember is the big bang, you know, it was like the big bang, and then I woke up and had glass in my hair and a 3-piece suit on, and my first thought was, you better get out of the car before it blows up. And I was able to, you know, open the door and get out, and I looked back and I could not believe I lived through that. And, you know, obviously, you know, sometimes people have to come close to death or have a scary experience to wake them up or snap them out of their lethargy. And it doesn't have to be that way. We can just, you know, choose to jump. But think of all the people that are working in jobs that they just hate, with people that they don't like, and in corporations, you know, where they just feel stifled. And not everybody is like that. Sometimes you can work in a corporate environment and enjoy what you're doing. But life has become very materialistic, and you know, we're just running in a treadmill to keep up. Now we're running to keep up, let alone get ahead and get more than the other person. And it's just not working anymore. Life shouldn't be about that.
Yeah, people don't understand that you don't take your cars or clothes with you to the grave. The only thing you take is your experiences. Try to experience as much as possible. I mean, you know, what limited resources you may have, you know, enjoy it. I mean, if you can, I know people gas and stuff, then try to do things, to even go hiking or whatever, do things, see a show, wherever your circumstance, or hang out with your friends, but try to do as much as you can to experience and enjoy, because you know when the plug is pulled, it's pulled.
Exactly. You know, and for me, the most valuable experiences have been all the ones that are the most loving and most intimate. You know, whether it's with your dog or your relationship, your other half, your wife, your children, and the rest of it. it does seem to really boil down to being about love. And, you know, the great masters throughout the ages have not had great deals of money. If anything, they give it away or they don't have any. I was just watching a video on YouTube about Amma, and she's the guru who gives hugs, and she gives hugs to thousands of people, and she does this like all day long. And you wonder, where does she get the energy? Well, she gets it because she's here to give of herself, you know, and not to take. And it's just, people are transformed by, they wait for hours just to get a hug from Amma, and it's an amazing story, you know. And there are so many people like that that walk the earth that we don't hear about that in the daily papers, you know, the news on the television. We hear about this and that and all of the negative fear-provoking stuff, and we live in a state of fear. And it's so important to move out of fear and, you know, get in touch with, you know, what's beyond that and start living from our authentic selves. You know, so like you said, that's really an important thing, because you can't take it with you. You know, no matter how much you have, millions and trillions and quadrillions, you know, it's gone. You know, when you cross over, you know, you have to, you know, you have what you have, and that's it. And how
and
you
the only
treat
thing
people.
You take, the only thing to take with you is your experiences.
Exactly, exactly. And I don't think there's any judgment on the other side, but I do think that what we do and how we affect people and how we impact this world does carry over into that side of life.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
We do have to live with our actions. And, you know, if people were harmed by us, then I think that that's something that we have to deal with. You know, just like committing suicide is not a way out, because that's something you have to deal with. You know, you can never escape from yourself.
Yeah,
you know, at some point you have to be responsible and realize that, you know, what you think and what you feel does create a reality here on this planet. And this is a time, you mentioned 2012, when a lot of people believe that we're in end times now. And whether or not we are, it doesn't matter. This is still a planet that is alive, and, you know, we're not taking care of it. We're not taking care of our planet. And you can see the signs of this everywhere. The bees dying out. I just saw somewhere there was a news piece on more dead zones in the oceans.
Yeah,
and the
also,
oceans
you know,
are enormous, and you think that they're going to live forever, but you know what? They're dying. They're dead zones in the oceans all over the world. Look at the melting of the North and South Pole. You know, they can practically drive across it now.
Right.
And then everybody's staking out their oil interests. You know.
Right.
It's just getting to be so disgusting. You know.
But there's I think multiple circumstances of that because you were talking about the bees dying out, but there's also the key thing for Earth is actually the. I don't know if people are aware of the frogs, frogs, the amphibians go down. That's actually the key thing for actually all mammals, because they are the ones who actually eat the mosquitoes and negative bugs, so they're like the big balance of nature.
It's a chain, it's a web, and
right.
If you start plucking at any one of those invisible lines, you know, the web starts to lose its ability to hold us and support us.
But I do tend to disagree on the circumstance that the Earth tends to fix itself. As much as the humans think we're... First of all, like, I have a different idea about global warming. I think, and it may blow people's minds about, like, you know, it's. I think humans may have, like, maybe if lucky, 10% affecting the global warming, to tell you the truth. People, if you really want to know the facts, you can know that the sun, and this gets into 2012, what you're talking about.
It's cosmic.
And, well, the sun is always expanding, and it's creating a larger magnetic energy. If you look in our within our solar system, all the planets have actually warmed up within our solar system.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And the electromagnetic energy is pushing so ahead. Far through, when we're coming to through the Mayan calendar, that actual alignment, which happens on 2012, December 21st, when we're literally lined in a, you can draw a little line right down from the sun all the way through our solar system, directly into the middle of the Milky Way,
yeah,
and into
yeah.
our galaxy. We're all lined up, and that only happened so many, I think like 11,000 years.
Yeah.
But I think that somebody brought up, and I don't know if you heard of David Wilcock, and he and he had brought up an event, and then I read a lot of his stuff, and other people, where the electromagnetic energy is actually affecting our DNA, which is actually affecting our on the that side, the DNA, but also affecting our spiritual side, because the electromagnetic energy is affecting our spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
It's opening people up on Earth. That's
mm-hmm.
why I think there's, like what you were talking earlier about, people becoming more aware of things that are happening now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the physical aspects, or I should say more quantum physics along with electromagnetic physics, affecting us and changing circumstances. And people are being pulled one way or another. And, you know, that's why you have these big pulls of whether it's Islamic fascist or Christian fascist systems as happening, religious fanatics on one side trying
mm-hmm.
to hold as much as they can, or even Judaic, and trying to hold on to their old school ways of what they had, even though they're counter to what the reality is,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to hold on. And then people, if they're going to have a choice to become aware and accept and understand what the reality of what circumstances really are on our spiritual side, not what we've been consistently lied to or manipulate to believe in, and
mm-hmm.
those, and people are going to be separated. It's going to be a choice of separation where people are going to become either evolve
mm-hmm.
or those who do not wish to evolve, but then they will be under the circumstances of the less evolved in their choice, and they will receive their karmic situations because of it. But they won't have problems because on this plane it's going to be so elevated of energy that our vibrations are going to be so high that the people who choose not to raise their vibration and tend to keep a lower vibration will not be able to hold on this plane on Earth, basically not be around on this plane.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you.
And I think that's why there will be a definite separation. And this is all about choice, like you had said before, and it's all individual choices about learning. You know, like shows that we have, it's not by chance that, look in the past, look at BBS Radio, how it was just started, how it is evolving and expanding, how much more other shows, and it's expanding more, and other circumstances, and people writing more books, and people writing more ideas, and people are just doing for doing just to, because they're becoming more aware and more evolved of circumstances. Even where I work, it's sort of funny. People where I work on my day job, which I do at night, it's very much corporate because I do graphic art. But the people there are very, not so high on the food chain as far as spirituality. But I'm telling you, for some reason in the last 6 months have changed. It's like almost art. You can see it almost evolve. People I'm hearing reading about The Secret, they're all excited. Hey, I read about The Secret.
Yeah.
Or I learned about, hey, faster things.
Yeah.
And then another person, and you know, you have to become aware. Even my media boss, who I thought was, she was very agnostic and very analytical, and she wouldn't believe it unless you see it type of thing, is now realizing faster things.
Absolutely.
That you actually think. She first time I was like in shock when she told me, hey, if you think a certain way and you act something, if you act mad all the time, guess what? Your whole life is going to be mad around you.
It's full of madness.
Yeah, and I'm looking, wow, look at that's pretty profound coming from
you.
You know, and I was like, and it's so that sort of shocks me, and it sort of gives me a little grin in a way. I'm like happy when I see that finally happen because
I mean,
the worst thing is seeing people walk around like drones.
Yeah,
hitting walls, and when I see people opening up and realizing what's really going on and how they're and evolving, it's like, damn, that's cool. You know, people are now finally getting it. You know,
absolutely. You know, and it, as you said, it's about the energy that's being beamed through and on us at the quantum level, and we're moving out of duality and out of a third density relationship to the universe and the galaxy to a higher density, fourth, fifth, and who knows how. You know, where we will go from there, but, you know, we're poised to take kind of an evolutionary leap as a whole. And so as people wake up, they're seeing through the lies and the control and that which has been set up to keep us at a certain level. And as we break out of that, there's not going to be any stopping it. You know, we're aligned now with, we're on the planet. The planet's starting to move into a higher density, higher energy level, a higher vibration. And we won't be able to keep from having this happen. You know, nobody will be able to stop it. The people who are in control or think they are going to be surprised because it's people power. We're moving into the age of Aquarius, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the planets are aligning up in such a way that awakening is a happening thing.
And it's no coincidental thing that the situation with oil, with energy, and for people thinking they're locked in on this one way of our energy source.
Absolutely.
And I think what it's pushing, I think almost like the universe going, okay, we're going to really push the metal in the middle here.
Oh, absolutely.
And pull the oil thing out and forcing people, and they're going to find out, like I've had on past shows as well, but and I know people just check out about free energy. There, we do have absolute free energy, the utilization of free energy.
Oh, absolutely.
But and that goes back to the Bilderbergs. But if we had like free energy, then you guess what would happen? It would change economics. There would be no money. We'd be almost like Star Trek-y, where we would have because then if you had free energy, you wouldn't have pay for the food, the clothing, material. It might be some really weird things about services, but eventually people would be just doing for things they like, enjoy doing, and learning to focusing on healing and bettering themselves.
Absolutely.
And that would be the next evolution, and we're heading that whether we like it or not, and there's people are trying to stop it, but you know, it's like, hey man, the train is going, and if you don't like it,
we're either
guess
go
what?
Over, yeah.
You're just going to be blown off the train
we
track,
can,
you know?
We can choose to go over the cliff and continue killing ourselves and killing each other.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a ludicrous. I mean, now it just seems so ridiculous that we could even think of living that way, or we can move forward and move into what's already here, and it's no secret that the energy has been, there has been free energy and that there have been back engineered devices, and you could go on and on and on about the second space program that exists without our knowledge and so on and so forth, but. All of that stuff is going to come to light, and if it doesn't, it doesn't matter because there will be a mass awakening to to energy devices, and it won't be stoppable. It won't be stoppable. You know, if you think about it, I was born in 1950, and it was the age when everything was going to be high tech, and they were talking about the Jetsons types cars. And if you think about it, for 60 years, we've gone backwards. The gas mileage has gone backwards, cars have become more boxy, and that's an intentional device. The oil monopolies have a grip on this whole planet, and they now control the government. So,
well, look what they did to the car. It used to be, when I grew up in high school, I used to be able to work on my own car. Now I look at it and go, what the hell with all the electronics? Well, they purposely do that. So that you cannot work on your own car. So you have to go take it down to a service guy and have him fix it for you. Or, you remind me of, because you grew up in the 50s. I don't remember, this goes way back because my dad told me way back when. But Los Angeles had actually the best public transportation in the United States, which is sort of hard for people to realize. They had electric cars. That ran through all through the city. In fact, you can see the old tracks, like Alvaro Street, and through a lot of the old city of L.A. But it not only went through there, but they used to go, because I remember my dad telling me, because he grew up in Hollywood, he would take every now and then with a bunch of his friends, head to what they used to call over the hill into the valley, which then was like the sticks. It was basically like farmland.
Yeah.
And there was one train that one of the tracks would take, you can tell an electric chair, and take your girlfriend on a picnic into the valley.
Mm-hmm.
But they would go all around the valley to Santa Monica, to the beach. They just hop on the electric train, and there they went. But in the early 50s, the What they did was the electric trains were bought out in collaboration with Firestone, General Motors, and there was one, Standard Oil. There was three of them bought out the electric trains, dumped them, and then the government built the first freeway, which is the Santa Monica Freeway, Highway 10, and then they started, here we go with the freeways.
Oh, yeah. And now they're outsourcing freeways. They're selling them to other countries.
Yeah.
And they're going to have toll freeways everywhere. So, you know, we're just going to have to reach a point where we just say, look, this is enough. We're not locked into this oil business. You know, this is ridiculous. Offshore drilling is not an option. And, you know, all of this, this is just, you know, they keep shoving this down our throats. And I think that the American people are reaching a point where they're just going to get fed up and say, you know, enough of this. You know, you guys are way behind the times. We're going to follow like other countries and invest in solar and wind power and all of these other technologies. And if we have to, we'll pay for it ourselves. You know, and it'll get done. You know, obviously, it's not going to get done if we wait for big oil and the government to hand it to us on a platter. It's not going to happen.
But it's definitely going to be an evolutionary thing, and I think we went full circle. And it's like whether, like you said, we're heading straight where we're heading, and if you want, you can either jump off to the cliff or stay on the train, basically.
Exactly.
But see, it's again back to even within what you talked about with your own book and your own experiences. It goes back to we're going to make personal choices. We're going to make choices and create our circumstances as well, too.
Oh, yeah.
Besides the universe pushing us along that way, but we also have our own, choice in whether to stay on that track or jump off the track.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so.
And I write about that in my book. The last couple of chapters talk about 2012 and some of the things that I've learned on the radio show, you know, just listening to my own guests. So I do delve into that.
And speaking about your book, how did, when you, and I know we don't have that much time, how would somebody be able to, I know it's online, I know you can check it out on Amazon, because I saw it was listed on Amazon.
Yeah.
Do you have a website to, you know, about your book, or a link to your book, or how would somebody get a hold of your book?
Well, the best way is just to go to Amazon.com and type in Tales of a Zany Mystic and read the reviews. There's probably 6 or 7 reviews there. And if it sounds interesting, just buy it. You know, I can guarantee it's going to be an interesting ride. And I hope that people will find that, you know, as nutty as my experiences have been, that they are it's inspirational, and that people who have difficulties with addictions will find it especially beneficial, and those who are working through sexual problems. You know, it's I talk about coming out and what it's like to be gay and the difficulties of that process, and then transcending it, you know, now, you know, becoming citizens of the universe. So it's all about raising our consciousness and learning how to be responsible for ourselves. So, and you can go to my blog, which is www.zanymystic.blogspot.com. And I write a blog there, and I have lots of links to other spiritual sites you can check out.
Oh, that's pretty fascinating. Well, I want to thank you, Zane, for coming on my show.
Well, thank you, Andrew. I really enjoyed it, and I appreciate the opportunity to be on the air on this side of the phone.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, it is different, but it's still fun, you know.
Yeah.
It's fun to talk about all this stuff. So
yeah.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk about my book.
Yeah, and I really enjoyed your book, and everybody definitely have to check it out. It does show people how to have to face themselves.
Yeah.
Basically, look yourself in the mirror. It's basically, here's how you have to look at yourself in the mirror and then accept yourself and become aware of yourself. And then that's the first step of moving forward, and then it shows you how you basically evolve, which was quite an amazing trip. And, you know, anybody who's gone through circumstances, it shows you don't play the blame game. Because it's always the same game.
Exactly.
And you can always move forward. And again, Zany, I want to thank you for coming on my show, and also enjoyed being on your show as well. twice.
Yeah, well, thank you.
And everybody out there in internet land, I want to thank you guys, all y'all, for listening to my show and future listeners in the archives. And again, if you have any questions of the shows, past show, this show, or any past shows, please do contact me at flyingpigs@artlover.com, or even thoughts about future shows you would like me to discuss, or of course at myspace.com/AndrewFetter. And I wish everybody a very happy, healthy, and blessed weekend. And next 2 weeks, hear me when I talk about certain circumstances, which will definitely open your eyes, and it ain't no secret. God bless you all, and thank you.
Thank you.